Charlie comes to a dangerous area. Good snap out of the pack by Fletcher. Zorko gets great purchase on it. Right to the teeth of goal. Cameron's there. That's dangerous. But Charlie's in the area. You've got a problem if you're a defender. And he's on the board. McKenna. He sees something deep. Joe's got body on his man. Rolls in. He can't miss from there. And now he's got 50 for the season. Rayner. Cameron's out the back. Here's trouble. Charlie is out the back. It's a beautiful ball. Charlie rolls in. Home crowd on their feet. Cameron's got two. Coming with a rush, though, was Rayner. Gives a bit of luck to the fans. And Brisbane respond. Luggage gets a run at it. Gets round onto the left. Wonderful finish, Hugh McCluggage. Brisbane still undefeated at home in 2023. They sew up second on the ladder. They get the run at the home finals.
It is the Brisbane Lions fan cast with JB and Patrick. The home and away season is done with a gritty win over the Saints. 9-18, which we will obviously get to in the episode. But the more important thing is two home finals are officially secured. Port Adelaide on Saturday the 9th of September, 7:30 at the Gabba is the first one. Whether we play a semi or a prelim is yet to be decided, but that is the home and away season done, and we go in with relatively good form into the finals, considering that we've had some scratchy wins, but they have been wins. Patrick, how did you see the game from your couch?
Well, I got a message, a birthday message from the other JB, and she said, "Happy birthday. Hopefully the Lions give you plenty of goals and reasons to cheer this afternoon," or something along those lines. I think she realized on the way to the game, she's like, "Oh, this is a Ross Lyon game."
Yes.
So possibly not going to happen. And yes, it was the most Ross Lyon game we probably ever could see. You know, accuracy an issue. The game was very slow and plodding, and there were like the line breaks were very few and far between. And we kicked like a drunken sailor, but we got the win. So I can't complain.
Yeah, at the end of the day, that's all that really matters. And, you know, we've been known to do this from time to time, pull out one of these games where accuracy is a bit of an issue. And hopefully that's out of our systems for the next few weeks at least. But yeah, you knew it was going to be some sort of night when Joe Danaher hit the post from 10 metres out directly in front. So that was sort of forecasting how the rest of the game was going to go. But some good games, especially from some of the midfielders. The one change, obviously, Link went out with that baby Mooey, as he said. JL comes into the starting 22, so stacked for midfielders. Kyle Omen as the sub, the only changes. So I don't think many people sort of expected that. I thought, you know, JL might stay the sub and Kyle Omen would come straight into the 18, but wasn't to be. But there we have it. Still no Fort to be seen as well. So as much as we sort of thought that Fags would use that insurance policy of the three talls just to have it there just in case, it hasn't worked out so far.
Showed us, didn't he?
Yeah. Maybe he's embraced the two tall forwards more than any of us.
he's kind of gone back past the point of no return. So, yeah, I mean, the lineup was, you know, fine. Brought in another mid. You know, JL was there or thereabouts. I think, I don't know, there's a part of me that wishes that, you know, Matho got to have a little run around, but, you know, as it were, not the case. It just seemed a little bit, struggled a little bit center clearance still.
Yeah.
You know, like, and I think that's kind of one thing that can be said for, at least we didn't kick more goals. They were quite damaging on center clearance, kind of a bit like the games a couple of weeks ago. So who knows? If we'd kicked straighter, maybe it would have just been a high scoring game and a bit more of a shootout, as it were. But, you know, that is neither here nor there and not really worth thinking about. I got a bone to pick with you and myself.
Sure.
We really put the mocker on Kitty Coleman and McKenna in that first stretch. We were tapping them up as the best kicks in the competition.
Yeah.
Only to have, well, at one point in time, it was 3 out of 4 kickouts that were direct turnovers by the two of them. McKenna with back-to-backers. And Coleman uncharacteristically put a few in places they need not be. Although Coleman did really kind of improve and make amends on quite a few of those mistakes. So
yeah, I think it's because they were all so close together that they just really stuck out. I think they were all in the space of like the same quarter at least. And you're like, what are these two doing?
Yeah, I don't know. I felt partially responsible for that. So it was, you know, what are you going to do about it? Just don't do that. And we're going to say they're good kicks for AFL players.
Yes.
They're all right.
Yes.
The two of them. Oh, goodness me. A couple of like dumb 50-meter penalty kind of got the Saints up and going. Jade Gresham looks like a weirdo. Not really too much to write home about with St Kilda there. They're an odd little team, aren't they?
They are. And I think, I can't remember where or when it was pointed out, maybe in the round so far in AFL with Kane Corns, he said that, you know, Ross Lyon has gotten the best out of that team with the list that they've got cobbled together. So it's by no stretch of the imagination a, you know, an elite list with that many A graders, but they have managed to do what they can. And that's, I guess, the beauty of Ross Lyon and what he can get out of people. Just touching back on Jade Gresham, my friend has always said that Jade Gresham looks like, you remember the old, like the first Wii, the Nintendo Wii?
Yeah.
And you get those little me characters.
Yeah, he does look like a me character, doesn't he?
And since he said that, I can't get that out of my head. He looks like a little Nintendo Wii me character. And yep, he will forever be that for me.
I feel like that's going to be one of the things that now everyone is going to see, regardless of whether he's at the Saints or not. Yeah, rightio. Well,
sort of like when someone pointed out to me that Bailey Fritch looks like the bad kid from Toy Story.
Yeah, but he just looks like a knob anyway, so he does. It doesn't really matter.
He does. He's got a very punchable head. A very punchable bird-like head.
Well, it's almost a bit like that guy as well that can't unsee Darcy Wilmot's artillery-like kicks now, so all good. Well, he was hitting a few darts through the corridor.
He was.
I mean, that was interesting. It was an interesting game. It was like, it was dull as hell, but it was pretty interesting. I don't know, like, at the game, was it as stifling to watch as it looked?
Yeah, it was just incredibly frustrating. Incredibly frustrating that we got the ball inside 50 so much, couldn't make the most of it, and then, you know, four or five quick kicks, and they somehow managed to get it down there. Membry would take a mark, or Gresham, or we'd give away a stupid 15-meter penalty, and they'd get a goal out of it. So it was just like, we worked so hard to try and hit the scoreboard only to kick, you know, four or five behinds in a row, and then they can seemingly do it with ease. You know, their midfield got on top in patches as well. So, it was just a really frustrating match, and I think everyone knew what was at stake. I mean, the players, the supporters, and everyone at the ground sort of knew what was at stake, and it just got to the point where it was like, well, can you just get this win? We'll deal with it afterwards. We've got two home finals, and put ourselves in the box seat if we can, and we'll go from there.
Well, the funny thing is that if it had blown out, like, the Saints would have been in trouble later on in the round, which is something that I didn't even factor in. And, you know, did Ross the boss even factor in? I bet he was probably a bit like, oh, I guess we're lucky we only lost by 12 points when GWS were 45 points up against Carlton.
Yeah, but seemingly GWS didn't really know either, because they put the cue in the rack against Carlton, as it was pointed out in our Discord from Rob, that, you know, they only had to kick one or two more goals and they had plenty of time on the board to do it, to steal that home final, and they just, you know, ran out of urgency to do it. So it possibly didn't come into account for those two teams. So, don't know, but yeah.
Hmm.
Not my circus, not my monkeys.
Yeah, right on.
Yeah, just to touch back on that, you know how we occasionally talk about the AFL expected score? That had us winning by 50-odd points.
Well, it should have, you know. Like, what did Fagan say about Danaher? It's like, Danaher's like, well, I haven't done that too many times in my career. He's like, you shouldn't have done it ever. Like, 10 metres out, are you out of your mind? And also, like, it does happen because he lines up for goal 1 metre out and you're still like, well, could go anywhere.
Yep.
Like, does that really happen with anyone else except for maybe McStay a couple of years ago?
Yeah, it is the Joe Danaher experience, isn't it?
Well, I did again say that we were used to a more consistent Joe show, and then we get this bag of tricks. So,
yeah, you said his polar opposites were closer together than they were.
Yeah, it's a you know, lower ceiling and a higher floor, and he gave us the lowest possible floor of a 10-meter poster. So, you know, maybe I should stop talking, but also do not stop talking. Yeah, it was an odd one. You know, center clearance overall, we were kind of 10-11. I don't think ours were quite as effective. It's interesting when you, like, lose the old Ashcroft and his, like, number one competition effective clearances. It does seem to make quite a bit of difference, but we smashed him at stoppage all around the ground. And quite a lot of our goals kind of came from turnover and stuff like that. So, I don't know, the old profile in pretty good shape. We're just not scoring quite as much from stoppage as we have been. But you can't score a great deal from both all at the same time. So,
yeah, whereas our turnover game has, you know, we've sort of gone through, you know, fits and spurts where our center, especially center clearance game, was well on top. We were number one in the AFL for a good portion, but then our turnover game sort of dropped off, and now it sort of swung back the other way a little bit. So if we can find a happy medium for both of those things, it'd be all right.
If you've got a mate that loves the Lions, tell them to get the podcast into their ear holes.
Big O came back. He'd had a couple of quieter games, but
back to life.
Yeah, he had a really good game on the weekend, and Rowan Marshall is evidently someone that he matches up quite well against.
Yeah, well, it's good though. Rowan Marshall in the conversation for All Australian. Yeah, good to see him perform pretty well in that sort of a context. Just back on that, like, I think probably early on in Fagan's tenure, we were a pretty heavy stoppage team, and we did get done by turnover in finals. So maybe that, well, I mean, for sure, that's got to be a concerted effort to kind of switch that around, because we did see, although Carlton probably less to play for, how their stoppage game kind of matched up against the rampant orange turnover. So, you know, maybe they could struggle in finals in terms of how, in a similar way that we did. But early on in our sort of spell at the top, but difficult game to kind of break down in terms of, like, individual performances. I thought, you know, Rainer kicked a really good goal. McCluggage kicked a really good goal. Albeit McCluggage seemed to be a little bit quiet, but maybe he wasn't and I was just blind.
He's had a good stretch. Like, he's had a good, I would say, probably 2 months of footy. So, in the context of that, he was quieter, but it's still a solid game. Bez has put together a really good month as well. So, he was, he had a fantastic game.
And I thought Harris is really good value. And Darcy Wilmot deserves a mention for just his, like, work in the contest and stuff like that. Like, he's always just doing weird stuff, and it really, really often works.
Yeah, and your brother will be happy. I had a chat to both your brothers at halftime, actually, because they were sitting a few rows behind.
Oh, no shit.
We were having a chat at halftime, and your brother John said, "How come no one's talking about Darcy Wilmot?" So, well, there you go. He'll be very happy with that. And I said, yeah, you're probably right. He doesn't get the plaudits that he deserves, and he's had a good season. Like, for a kid that's, well, for a kid to walk straight into the 22, not lose his spot, you know, lock that position up, and you can definitely count on him to perform his role. So, absolutely.
He is reliable, but it's like, how he's not kind of at least in the handful of players. Like, you know, he probably won't win the Rising Star.
No.
Because he won't. Because he's not, like, some sort of ball-getting magnet nonsense. But it's like, what, so Sheezel broke the disposal record for first-year player, right?
Yep.
Who had that before? Was it Byron Pickett?
No, there were some pretty handy names. I think Jack Viney was towards the top of that list. There was a couple that you looked at and you're like, oh, yeah, there's some handy names there. I think Nick Dacos was high on that list as well. But, yeah.
But if it was Byron Pickett, and I'm pretty sure it was, how bloody awesome of a season did that guy have in about 1982 then? Like, you know, because you, like, I look at it in relativity, you know, although the Lions aren't playing a high disposal game, the game is still pretty bloody high disposal. And, like, it's like comparing Simon Black's 39 positions in a grand final with Petrarca's a couple of years ago. Simon Black's for 2003 is like a 55 now.
Yeah.
Like, the game has changed so much that, like, is it really that surprising that a first-year player has broken the disposal record? And should that even really matter? You know, look at the importance in a good team that, like, Wilmot and that Ashcroft have kind of had towards it. I'm not saying that Sheezel's not good, because Sheezel is good. And this will kind of sound a bit oxymoronic and moronic for something that I'll say a little bit later on about the key forwards in just a greater sense. But I don't know. I just feel like he's gone under the radar because it is a bit of that, like, oh, well, he was a bit there last year, so people kind of forget that he's actually a first-year player. So I don't know, but I think he's got much more upside than is thought.
Yeah.
And he's had a much better season than people think. Like, he's easily, in my opinion, a top five first-year player or top five in the Rising Star this year.
Well, I can't remember if it was on this podcast that I said it or just in a conversation. It's pretty rare that you get a team, a top four team, that also has three Rising Star nominations in amongst it as well. So it's a really good sign that the list is a little bit more well-balanced than you thought, and maybe that, you know, while everyone's hitching their wagon to this is the year, hopefully we've got a few more years of high-quality football as well. So, yeah, you don't, like...
Well, it's a year, but there's many years. You know, like, Fagan touched on it as well, where, the, you know, the first couple of final series was, you know, McCluggage, Berry, Rayner, Bailey, et cetera's sort of first foray into finals. You know, they're still only, what, 23?
Oh, maybe a little 20, bit, maybe 24, 25, yeah.
Yeah. Like, they've still got the second coming if they choose to stick around. So, yeah, like, I think the group's got longevity in it, and then there's sort of drop-off to happen there or thereabouts, but the whole idea is that you're supposed to be proactive on that so you don't get left in a heaping mess that is West Coast, you know? I've been critical this year of their list management more than I've been Adam Simpson. So, yeah, list is in good shape, really good shape.
Yeah, and if we can stay, I mean, this will be the year in the off season that we see a little bit more turnover than we have over the last 4 or 5 years. I think we will see a little bit more player movement on our list as well. I think, yeah, there's a handful of players that'll probably look to get opportunities elsewhere and can't blame them. So we'll see what we see in the next couple of weeks, but we won't dwell on that just yet.
Do you reckon Jared Lyon went off with an injury, or was he just kind of, that was that?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, because he didn't have a great deal of impact. Was he running with Jack Steele for a while?
I think so, but Jack Steele didn't really have a massive game either from where I was sitting.
Yeah, so, I mean, I think he might have done quite more of a handy job than I thought he did. Yeah, Jack Steele, 20 disposals. JL had 11 to three-quarter time, so I don't know what the last quarter breakdown for Steele was. But, yeah, he was serviceable, but, you know, a bit uninspiring. Yeah, interesting that they didn't go with the other high half forward, but shows how good links come to the, you know, become to the team and to the group generally in terms of setting the tone and stuff like that. And equally for me, you know, equally as important as Charlie Cameron is in that. So
100%. And I think it was after the loss to the Bulldogs in round three where I think everyone sort of went, well, what's this bloody team all about? You know, you can't rely on Hipwood and Danaher as your key forwards. You're never going to win a premiership with those. You haven't got enough role players, all that sort of stuff. Where I think Link and Bez and Wilmot, three that we've spoken about already, are your role players. And Lester, you know, Froggy Lester, who probably came into the team after that round three loss. But those are your role players.
Well, you know, I didn't even, you know, you look down the list, Froggy for sure, but I spoke about it earlier on. I sort of said, like, are people expecting a little bit too much from Jared Berry? And, like, maybe his role is a role player on the wing. And I think he's had a pretty hard task, often matching up against some very good wingers in the competition. Like, McKenna almost plays as a role player for a halfback now as well. And then you've got, like, Cal Archie, who we've talked about as a quintessential role player. So it's like people have found their way. And maybe at that Bulldogs game, you're looking at the system being a bit... like, the team weren't quite sure what was expected in, like, a holistic point of view. There might have been the case of them looking at, you know, looking too closely at what they were supposed to be trying to do, that not seeing the whole picture, and it was sort of breaking down in that translation sort of step. But, yeah, goodness me, this team has kind of changed in terms of how it's been. Like, the last few games, I don't know how many people were necessarily expecting to beat Collingwood. Expecting probably not for me, but hopeful that we could. But the idea of just sort of, you know, the last 11 weeks, 9-2, obviously the Gold Coast game was a bit of a horror show, but that just seems like they turned up and we didn't. And the Melbourne game was, you know, a calamity that we all watched in real time, but also probably had two of our best quarters that we've played as a team.
Well, the stat that keeps getting thrown around is, like, no team that's lost more than one game in the last month of football goes on to win the flag. And Collingwood's dropped three, Port dropped two in that month, Melbourne, I think, they only dropped the one and we went sort of undefeated. So if you're going off that random metric of history, then we're in the box seat. But how much, you know, credence you put into that, I don't know.
It's a funny one because, you know, if Collingwood had beaten us, then all three teams would be sitting 3-1 in the top four. So it's kind of like, I don't know, it's sort of, it seems a bit lame because it's like, oh, well, if you're in the top four, you probably have played pretty well. So interestingly, I was going back and looking at things like I do, and I'm pretty sure that Richmond in 2019 had dropped two games before the finals and so won the flag. So more fool them. Yeah. Collingwood, where are they at? You know, Essendon decided that they just wanted to end the season a month early. So how good?
The other stat that works well for us is that, you know, the top eight versus the top eight, we are well and truly on top of that. So we're 8-2 against top eight teams. So we dropped the first game against Port, as we all know, and that 1-point game to Melbourne. So the next closest is Collingwood with 6-4. Melbourne's also 6-4.
Makes for good reading. Good matchup.
It all makes for good reading, and you know everyone's had their say on the state of where the Lions are at heading into the finals. But we also know that come finals time, you know, it's something mentally that hasn't quite clicked yet. So hopefully this is the year that it does. But yeah.
I mean, yes and no. I would argue that last year it did. You know, two big finals. One at Melbourne. We played against a pretty, you know. The first final against Richmond, there were a lot of people that were like, oof, you're coming up against Richmond, watch out.
Yeah.
You know, albeit they were two pretty bonkers sort of games. And, you know, that was really indicative of where finishing outside the top four kind of gets you. It's like, you know, we played two really good finals and then almost like puffed ourselves out and just played against a well-oiled machine that was Geelong.
Yeah, well, no one was going to beat them.
No, but also bear in mind, we've only lost two preliminary finals and they've both been against Geelong. So they're not in there. It's all happening, isn't it?
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't know. We've done everything right. And I think last year, you know, I've been critical this year saying that we didn't get the job done in the season last year, but we did quite a good job in finals. We've now limped to a top two finish, you know, with probably one eye on the finals. And here we are. So, you know, the game's in good shape. The team's in good shape. Fagan said that the back seven virtually hasn't changed in the past, like, ever. Probably since Rich and Gardner came out of the team. So it's been the same people. Every other year we've had chopping and changing the whole time. So that's, you know, pretty unheard of, given the injury crises at other clubs and stuff like that. Like, the team's in good shape. Of course we want to have Ashcroft there, but can't have everything, so...
No, he's probably the only noticeable absentee from our starting 22. I mean, there would have been a time where you said Daniel Rich, but, you know, I think everyone sort of realised the reality of that situation now. Link will come back in for that first qualifying final, you'd imagine, but Port are getting, I think, four of their starting 22 back for that game as well, including Dixon, who's had a good time off, so whether that's, you know... You can see that as, oh, well, he's come back, that's going to bolster them, or, well, he's coming back, but he's been off for a long time, so maybe it's subtraction via addition, who knows. Marshall comes back and a few others, so McKenzie, I think, is the other one.
It is interesting, Dixon, because he's kind of been pretty awful against us, except for the most recent game.
Yeah.
Like, he was almost just, like, completely played into Harris's hands in every one of those other games where he's sort of, like... Almost like the perfect key forward for Harris. And then, round one. Don't want to think about that. But, yeah, it's... I don't know. I think I said last week or the week before, you know, we won five games in a row against Port previous to this one. So, guys like Horn Francis kind of do worry me a little bit, their midfield run.
Yeah, their midfield's looking pretty dialed in at the moment. It's their back six where they leak goals. I think they're sort of in the bottom four for like... entries inside 50 turning into scores. So, you know,
well and truly think that, you know, ahead and behind the ball we're vastly superior to them, but, you know, in the middle it's a little bit like, oh, this could go interestingly, which is interesting because we've got a Brownlow medalist and a, you know, Bulldogs, which have all of the midfielders, best and fairest winner from last year, in there. So it should, it kind of doesn't make sense, but it, yeah, I don't know. Maybe just, we'll see something different. Like, we need to see something different than round one.
Well, Horn Francis tore us apart in round one, and he is looking more and more like Patrick Dangerfield each week. So if we can get someone to do a job on him, and then they've got Butters and Rosie that floats through, Boak, Houston, like they've got a lot of talent that rolls through there. We've just got to be able to match it and play our roles. And then, you know, if we create enough inside 50s, then we'll go a long way to winning. But then it's whoever's got the job on Pal Pepper, whether that's Stas, probably Stas or Kitty. Like, he's having a blinder of a year as well, Pal Pepper. And then, you know, Marshall and Dixon are the two keys we've got to worry about. And then, you know, they've just got players like Bergman and DBJ's having a better year this year than he has over the last couple. They've got a fair amount of decent role players in their team as well. So it'll be a good match. And, you know, I went to the player sponsor night last Monday and had a chat to some of the players. And the ones I spoke to, I said, well, as a fan, I've been waiting all year to have another crack at Port. Like, surely you guys are feeling the same. And they were all on the same page. Like, yeah, we've been ruminating on round one this whole season, and you know, we can't wait to have another crack at them as well. So I think it'll be a fiery contest.
Yeah, I think Horn Francis, I mean, I think earlier on, it's when you're wearing the Port Guernsey, might have even been the Prison Bars. You kind of had shades of Nathan Buckley early on in his career. So tell me more about the player sponsor night. Like, well, I didn't even know you did that.
Yeah, so
my finger is on a pulse of a corpse. So
so the last, oh, how long have I been doing this for? Maybe 5 or 6 years. I put in to sponsor a player.
Well, we all know about that, a certain Alex W.
Yeah, so Alex W I had for a couple of years, and then I had Dev last year, and then I was sick of sponsoring people that wanted to go to West Coast. So this year I've got Will Ashcroft was my sponsor child.
Which, I like that. It's like people sponsor starving African children, and you're like, Will Ashcroft, the footy man himself.
Yeah.
Well worth it, in my opinion. So.
Who wasn't at the sponsor night, unfortunately, with his knee and stuff. So I had a chat to just some other players. Had a good chat to Froggy. Had a chat to Bez. I actually had a really decent long chat to Shadow Brain, who is housemates with Will. And he was a legit guy.
I feel like he should be some sort of like MI6 CIA type.
Yep.
Like, does he just wear a tuxedo 24/7? Like,
no, he's got mullet and a mustache, so quite the opposite.
Maybe that's just the Australian version. I don't know. Did you wish Froggy a happy birthday for this week?
I didn't.
Or
no.
Did you forget?
I did forget. Yeah.
You're such a bastard.
Yep. I didn't forget yours though. I sent you a message.
I know, but I mean, you had the opportunity for the only other person born on the same day as me to wish him also happy birthday, and you blew it.
I did, I'm sorry.
All right. So Shadow Brain, spoke to him. What's his game? Is he like the most cerebral tagger ever?
Well, no, he came in as a half forward, like goal-kicking half forward, but he's been playing down back over the last month or so and enjoying it down there, sort of. He said he's really enjoying like getting mentored by Daniel Rich and Darcy Gardner down in the two. So who knows whether he'll ever crack into the senior team, but really nice bloke.
Shadow Brain.
Yeah. Before he got picked up in the rookie draft, he was a carpenter from Noosa. So just a bloke, you know?
Just a bloody bloke.
Yeah.
Get in touch anytime. Shoot us an email at blfancast@gmail.com or join the Discord.
Votes?
Yeah, a tough one this week, you know, and there's a good part of me that just wants to go, yeah, Neil the three because it's the default position, but I'm going to go Bez the three, actually. Just that's a culmination of a good, you know, 4 to 6 weeks. I thought Zorko had a really good game as well. So Bez the three, Sinclair the two, and Zorko the one.
Always throwing away votes, aren't you?
I'm giving them to players I believe deserve them.
What? Jack Sinclair?
Yep.
He's going to factor in the old Lions fan cast, whatever the hell it is.
I know, but there's enough podcasts that give votes to their own players. And I think that's just a bit of a cop-out because you end up giving votes to players that potentially don't deserve it. Here I am defending Jack Sinclair like some sort of, I don't know.
You're also really, really, really putting me down in my place, aren't you?
No, well, no, because there's definitely players. There's definitely players that could have deserved votes on our team, but I didn't think any were more deserving than Jack Sinclair.
I know. It's funny because I was like, I don't want to do votes when we started this bloody thing, but here we are. You saying that I'm a basic bitch for only voting for my own team. So here we go. Wilmot the 3, Buried the 2, and Harris the 1.
Lovely.
That's what I'm doing because I'm your atypical basic bitch.
Well, I'm not going to argue with that either because they were all deserving of votes as well.
Yeah, all right. Well, our votes, there you go.
Yeah, there you go. I can't foresee too many changes. Link in, JL out for the first qualifying final. You're not gonna mess with the team too much from now on, I would imagine, unless absolutely necessary. I think the week off has come at a good time.
Yeah, I'm just wondering what the kind of sub scenario is probably going to be. Whether they will look at, will they look at Fort or will they not? Just as a contingency, like I don't know. I don't know whether Lohman kind of has it for me in terms of impact. I know, we've talked and he hasn't really had a good run at it, but like, yeah, it's just very minimal. He didn't kick the 10 goals I was expecting.
Well, if that's the bar, then yes, he's probably going to chronically underperform.
The floodgates were open, so.
I would imagine JL will go back to being the sub. That'd just be my gut feel on that situation, especially with Port's midfield. I think he's going to want some depth in the midfield, so JL will probably be that bloke.
Yeah, interesting. I really can't pick it. It does seem to be a slight level of drop off with our 22 people on the field. Yeah.
Yep.
22 to 23 is actually quite a drop off for me. So, yeah.
Well, I think kind of we've got we've definitely got AFL quality players on the list for depth, but it's just like where do we want it? And then I don't know that Fags is going to want to put a Nekiah Cockatoo or a Reece Matheson as the sub as their first game in a final. Having said that, he did that with Motti last year, so who knows? Because I think they're probably going to be your most impactful tactical sub. You know, imagine halfway through a third quarter and then just unleashing Reece Matheson to give some really super fresh legs in the midfield, or a Nekiah Cockatoo to just go in and cause some carnage.
Well, that's one of the things I don't quite understand about the JL kind of experience is like, he's not fresh anything.
No.
His legs are kind of, very, like someone's got one of those meat mallets just like going at him for three quarters. But I don't know. Well, I guess we'll find out what happens. Like I'd love to see Nekiah Cockatoo. You know, Reece Matho hasn't played this year, but whatever.
Your other options are probably like Pryor or Sharp. The other option is bloody Gunston makes a comeback from the knee, but I highly doubt that.
Gunston, the impact sub, how about that?
It wouldn't be for this final. It might be weeks 2, 3, or 4, but surely Fags has learned his lesson at this stage to not muck around.
We'd want to hope so. So we're playing Port at the Gabba on
Saturday night, 7:30. It is going to be a big one. I think it's going to be a bloody spicy game.
So we're closing out the round.
Yeah. So we'll know who we play at that stage. Should we lose, it'll either be St Kilda or GWS. I'm not particularly worried about either of those teams. GWS more so than St Kilda, but
yeah.
I'm hoping I'm not going to have to worry about it at all.
No, I would just enjoy the rounds of footy as they come, I think, and the games. I think with this final series, like, we're in such a neat position that it's sort of just an element of, like, enjoy it, like, for the fans, for the players. Like, pressure's obviously going to be there and expectations are going to be there, but, like, there's definitely an element of when we finished top two in 2019, way ahead of where we should have been. 2020 was kind of a bit of a unique experience, which I don't think was conducive to enjoying anything.
Yeah.
Given what we were going in COVID. And then, you know, kind of fair to say that in the two seasons after that, we relatively underperformed. Yeah, I reckon for this season, I'm just going to try and enjoy it. Try not to be too critical. I've seen a lot of negativity about the performance. A bit of lack of perspective that it was a Ross Lyon game. And that, the team haven't necessarily been, like, playing super amazingly, but, like, they're getting the job done in ways that we kind of haven't seen them get the job done before. You know, a lot of people sort of saying, like, the end of looking at it being a bit of a percentage shootout going into the top two, but we won all our games and no one else did. So that put us where we are.
Yeah, you're right. And it is good practice for finals because it's not, you know, while everyone wants us to win by, you know, 8 goals every week, it's certainly not going to be the case for finals. And those gritty wins, the ones that you've got to just limp over the line in, the ones you've got to get the practice in. So, you know, we're not going to get any easy games from here on in. It's not like we're just going to storm into the Gabba and blast Port. As much as I'd love that, I don't see it happening that way. So, yeah.
Well, I keep sort of reminding, you know, people that I talk to, it's like, you know, everyone is always looking for that four quarter performance. You know, it's on every coach's lips, it's on every fan's lips, it's on every critic's lips of a four quarter performance. But it's like, how often does that actually happen? The other team is also trying to win all four quarters. And often that doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to kind of always win. If one team blows you out of the park for one quarter and holds their ground for three, then they can win and they can play pretty good footy. So I might even have said that last week about Collingwood. So I've had so many bloody conversations this week, given it's been my birthday, that I've forgotten everything that I've spoken about every person. So here we are in this land of insanity.
There's a definite air of trepidation but excitement and over the next couple of weeks of where we can go, what we can do.
Hopefully it's less trepidation in the way that Luke Beveridge said it and more fun trepidation.
Yes.
We're not lining up against West Coast, are we?
Make sure you follow us on socials. Just search for BL Fancast.
Any observations around the comp?
No, I think obviously the final eight is now sorted with that game against GWS and Carlton. Who knows what's going to happen with Wietering. He might be cited for a bit of an eye gouge on Toby Green.
But he should. Toby Green's a saint. I got a question, and I sent you a message about this last night.
Sure.
Should the Coleman medalist be a default All-Australian?
Probably.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Who do you think has been the best forward this year? Or the one most deserving? I don't know. Should there be a relative Coleman medal if you're playing against garbage teams three times?
I mean, you still got to kick bags, I suppose, in those games. And
I find it interesting. So when we played North Melbourne at Gather Round,
yeah,
there was a bit of an era of like, oh, well, it was just North Melbourne.
Yeah.
Like, you know.
Fill your boots.
And I get that. I totally get that. I'm on board with that. But somehow, when Tex Walker and Charlie Curnow have kicked 22 and 24 goals respectively against North Melbourne and West Coast, and Nick Larkey's kicked 8 because he only got to play West Coast twice. Like that kind of, I don't know, a lot of the Curnow package that I watched and talking about him going into September, and maybe he'll rip some teams apart, I don't know. But a lot of those highlights were against West Coast, playing on, I don't know, Alex W. as a key defender or something like that.
Yes.
So not much McGovern, not much Hearn going on there. But yeah, Nick Larkey, if you take out those teams, he's got a better average goal-to-game ratio compared to the other two. But I don't know. I feel like if he doesn't get an All-Australian, if it goes to Curnow and Tex Walker, which would be the obvious thing to do, it'd be a bloody shame on Nick Larkey, I think.
True. I don't know.
He hasn't had the luxury of playing on Griffin Logue, who's 500 kilos too heavy, and the other McKay.
You're right.
He didn't get that luxury of 10 goals or 9 goals or whatever.
I just can't stand Nick Larkey, though. And that is knowing absolutely nothing about the bloke. Yeah, just he's not my go. I don't know why. Just one of those guys that, yeah, you can get in the bin, Nick. I do have a weird sense of respect for what Taylor Walker's been able to do in his twilight years, but also not the best bloke rolling around for obvious reasons.
No. I like the baseless accusation on Nick Larkey, but there's so much basis for accusation about Tex Walker, and you're like, yeah, he's all right.
Yeah.
You absolute goose. Wouldn't have it any other way, I guess. Any of our blokes getting the All-Australian, you reckon?
I think Charlie will probably press his case. I think he's been the best small forward. Another 50-goal year and 250 goals over the last 5 years, and not too many other people have been able to do that. So I think Charlie, Harris will be thereabouts, might be a squad.
It's interesting how Harris has kind of like gone back into the shadows in this last, like the back half of the season. Like he was everyone's almost lock in the first half. And since we've been winning games, he's not been getting spoken about because I think, as I said earlier on the season, like we don't want Harris to be having these like epic billion intercept mark games because it means that our defensive pressure and, you know, forward pressure, the ball's getting in too much. So it is interesting that when you, you know, the old Justin Leppich adage of like, when your team's playing the best footy, it's the easiest to defend. So maybe he might get a little bit, you know, usurped by Wiedering. Wiedering. Neil could be on the bench, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, Neil might be a squad. Joe.
I kind of feel like with Neil, like he probably doesn't deserve to be in there and put someone else that's been really good in there. Yeah. You know? I don't necessarily like people being picked on merit. Like, I don't necessarily think Tom Stewart should make it because his year compared to his other years has not been as good. And his team has suffered because of that. And it's like, just put someone else in there. Like,
well, I think Sam Taylor should probably get that spot.
Yeah, Sam Taylor for sure. There's a lot of, I don't know, I just, you know, the time has gone of just having like Patrick Dangerfield in it every year and stuff like that, where you just be like, oh, it's Dangerfield and Bontempelli and Selwood. And you're like, okay, cool. Every year, cool. It's fun.
Well, I think Bontempelli will probably make it.
Oh, for sure, you know, but Bontempelli probably will, but that was just an example.
But yeah, as far as Lions in the 22, I'd say Charlie Cameron, and then anyone else would probably be squad. Like Joe might be squad, because even though he hasn't put through the goals, he's had you know, significant impact, especially in big games, and then obviously a lot of that second ruck time as well. So he might be in the squad. I can't really think of too many others that would be pushing their case.
How funny are the Bulldogs?
Yeah.
I was definitely going for GWS just to spite the Bulldogs. Sure. After making me live through a pretty garbage situation, keep harping back to. Sucked in is all I've got to say. For overestimating your list and resting on your laurels and having people like Jack McRae in your team and Adam Treloar.
So much vitriol for Jack McRae from you.
He's just useless. Like, what is he? Like, he might as well just be, instead of a human, one of those like things that bouncers use to count how many people are at the pub, like those little clicky boys. That's all he is a clicky boy. I apologize if clicky boy is some sort of derogatory term somewhere in the world, but he's a stat monkey, and that's all he'll ever be.
Sure.
He's indicative of their failings.
Yeah, honestly, bugger the Bulldogs. They they've been mismanaged. For the list they've got, they've been mismanaged. So, yeah, who knows what's going to happen with them? What sort of changes are going to happen?
Well, see, I'd say their top end talent is there, but their list is not. They don't have the role players, and they don't have the average player is like pulled up so heavily by their top end talent that I just think that their list is very much overestimated. So, they're probably sitting about where I think they are. And they're not getting the, you know, it's a classic example of like, if they had Adam Kingsley or Ross Lyon getting the most out of their players, maybe they wouldn't be quite as shit, but here they are. The idea that they could have three All-Australians and possibly a Brownlow medalist and sit outside the eight is pretty funny. So sucked in.
Fair enough then. Other than that, nothing else happening around the world to the AFL that is particularly noteworthy for our chat here. Obviously a huge... huge host of retirements, and there'll be more to come over the next few weeks as well. You'd have to imagine it's just going to be a bit strange, a final series without Geelong.
Yeah, I won't miss it.
No, I won't miss it. It's just going to be a bit sort of odd.
I don't know what to say about that.
They'll be back.
Just to rub salt in the wound, Sandy Roberts, the whole night, called me Big Jeff Brown. Jeff, did he? Oh, no.
All right, well, it's time for our Nostalgic Player of the Week, and... I believe, like I had with Billy Longa last week, you've got a dual citizen of the Port Adelaide Brisbane kind.
Yeah, look, it's a situation that basically like I've run out of ideas. So I've gone for a player who was instrumental in the deal that got Lachie Neale to the club. That is the nostalgia that I have for him. It's Sam Mays.
Sam Mays.
High draft pick, low output player.
Yeah, he had flashes. In his time there,
But yeah, nothing notable. I had higher hopes for Sam Mays when he came through.
I think we all did. We all did. And I think there was a point in time where he was actually charting quite high in the old super coach or whatever that thing is at the time. His half back picking up kicks was quite good for that as a low value player. So that's really one of the values that he had. He also used to vomit before games.
That's right.
Terrifyingly, I've heard.
Oh, yeah.
I remember a clash of the Titans back in about 2017 of him squaring up against a then Gold Coast Suns Calamachi for a bit of a dust up. Which I had a screenshot floating around of that for a while, and it was quite funny to look at because during Calamachi's kind of early teething phase at the Lions, that I've noticed that. So, Sam Mays. I'm really reaching here, aren't I?
A little bit. But I get
it. He may have been a great clubman, but no, I did not send him an Instagram message about waxing his private parts. So, more fool me, I say. I should have gone for Rockliffe, shouldn't I?
Nah. I mean, what can you say about Tom Rockliffe that hasn't already been said?
He has a dog. That's all I know about the guy. He had a dog. And he used to do those ridiculous YouTube videos wearing a long sleeve skins shirt, but it was like the old one. So it looked really weird, like he was ready to go swimming all the time. And now you got a 2-for-1. I'm sorry for really roughing up these old players from time to time, but
I mean, that's fine. I don't think anyone's looking back on Sam Mays' career and going, wow, that guy lit it up. But as we do like to say, he's got more AFL games under his belt than I do anyway. So good on him. He seemed like a nice bloke, Sam Mays.
I just remember there were some funny times where he was maybe judging some sort of Josh Walker breakfast show on the YouTube channel, and he was, yeah, I don't know, seems kind of funny. But also vacant.
Yeah, bit of a... He had serious NPC vibes, didn't he?
Yes, yeah, he did. And seems to be struggling with a bit of concussion stuff now, so I assume that's probably not getting any better.
No, I suppose not, but... yeah, all the best, hopefully.
Don't like to see that?
No. Certainly not. Well, that's it. We've got a serious game to look forward to in a couple of weeks' time. I don't know. Do we want to culminate the votes so far and give an update, or do we want to keep that under lock and key until after finals?
No, I reckon do the same thing, like player of the season, player of the finals.
Oh, cool. Well, we can do that. We'll have a winner next week for our award that has no name, just votes that we give each week on the Brisbane Lions Fancast. Finals for fifth year in a row, and wow, some serious pressure, but some serious excitement surrounding it all. So, look forward to it. Now we're just gonna try and secure some tickets
for the games.
Yeah,
you don't get tickets.
Should be able to land some.
Yeah, I remember back in the day. This is probably before your time at the Gabba, where your season ticket was a piece of plastic that would get like punched out when you'd go in.
Yeah.
And every season it had like all of the finals on there as well.
Yeah, well, that was probably like a, there you go, well, if we make it, there you go, we'll deal with that later.
And how? Richmond, that Richmond preliminary final. What a punch card that was.
But I do want to leave you on one thing. You little beauty!